Welcome to the Quantum Leopard podcast. Quantum Leopard is a multi-award winning, pay what you like, no punching down, no picking on the audience, gender balance booking, Central London Saturday night of lovely comedy, and this is its podcast. Every episode we'll have a recording of a real live set from one of our nights and an interview with the comedy brain behind it. We have videos of full shows up on patreon.com/quantumleopard, and that's going to have loads of sets that aren't in the podcast as well. We only charge when new live show videos come out. I'm your host and MC, James Ross, and this is Quantum Leopard. This episode, we have the wonderful Shelf. This set was recorded on the 23rd of April 2022 by Julia Zack at 2 Northdown. The interview took place on the 2nd of May 2023. Shelf are a truly exceptional queer sketch double act who absolutely smashed the room, whether it's full of grown-ups or kids. Content warnings on this set for experience of homophobia, misgendering, catcalling and drugs. Enjoy!
Clapping! Thank you. Oh, it wasn't a command, but thank you. Hello, everybody. We are Shelf. I'm Rachel, and this is Ruby.
Hey, hi. How you doing?
There's one guy wooing, and I'm loving it. It's just that everything is woo, woo. It's really great. Keep it up. But yes, exactly what I wanted. Sorry.
No, that's good. That's good. So you're all well. You're happy. Great. That's great to hear. So it's super nice to meet you guys. Sort of to introduce us to you, sort of notice that we probably have quite a similar sort of looks, like androgynous or masculine kind of thing. We're aware that it's quite a particular vibe that we have, which is a sort of Goonies / kid detective.
Yeah, we very much look like we're off to solve a mystery.
Yeah, thank you. That means that we quite often get mistaken for boys. Yeah.
Never men.
No.
Never once a fully grown adult man. No one ever looks at this and goes, ah, yes, men. It's never men, only ever boys. And sometimes shockingly young boys. I went into a woman's toilet not that long ago, and an older lady in there stopped me to ask if I was looking for my mum. Yep. And she genuinely said it. She said it with so much like confidence and so much concern, I panicked and just went, yeah. And then I had to just double down, so I was in this woman's toilet going, Mom! Mom, you in here? And I don't know if any of you, as adults, has anyone ever called for their mum as an adult? Something happens when you call for your mum as an adult, it reignites the inner child. And when your mum doesn't come, you're suddenly like, Mom? So I started tearing up, like, I knew my mum wasn't in there. I knew she wasn't going to come out. I'd been out by myself because I am an adult. But I'm now tearing up in there like, Mom! And this woman was so concerned, she ended up escorting me out of the bathroom back to my table where I sat down and finished drinking my pint. I needed to calm down, you know. I was like, oh, thank you so much. And she walks away more concerned than ever. Just
real roller coaster. The last time something like that happened to me in a bathroom, I walked in and a woman in there goes, oh. So I think you're in the wrong one. And they were gender neutral. So I've just been in crisis since then, really. If not there, then where?
So we've actually been doing a lot of gigs recently for actual children, which has been really fun. Yeah, real kids. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, it's been so much fun. And it's really interesting the way that they sort of relate to us.
Yeah, because they say there's a gay agenda, but we're out there on the front lines recruiting. Do you know what I mean? It's that. It is that. Yeah, because it is really interesting how they sort of engage with us as sort of more masculine presenting individuals. So it's like there's one sketch. So can we get an age? So we perform for, I keep accidentally saying go for, kids who are 5 to 10. And it's very key that I say we perform for children who are sort of between the ages of 5 and 10. And they're at an age where they very confidently like gender individuals, but have no real sort of understanding of or care how anyone else genders them. So like there's one sketch that we do where Ruby is like sneaking up behind me.
It's a fucking classic.
Oh. They fucking love it.
It kills.
Do you know what I mean? They are like going for, like, they're stupid.
Yeah.
They are, they're so stupid. Yeah. So Ruby is like sneaking up behind me, and half the kids are yelling, "She's behind you!" And the other half of the kids are yelling, "He's behind you!" And they do not care what the other half is shouting at all. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's really nice. Then at a gig a couple of weeks ago, this mother in the audience just goes, "They." "They are behind you."
Honestly, she stood up to say it. She stood up out of the crowd of children to say it, and it genuinely had the energy of, "I've listened to a podcast. I have, and this is my time to shine." Jump forward.
So delightful. I was like, nailed it. And yeah, it was really lovely. Those gigs are always so cute and so sweet, except for one that we did a little while ago, right? So we were doing this other bit that we do for them. We're basically like, "I'm chasing Rachel." It's another fucking classic.
They love it so much. And we're encouraging them to like sort of shout out like what we should do, like in terms of like how we should react, like where we should go. And there's one little boy in the front row and he's fucking loving it. Like he's losing his mind. He's there like, "Run, go left, go right, wrestle." And then he just pauses and goes, "Kiss." And obviously we didn't. Although then we were talking about it and we were like, representation.
Yeah, maybe we should learn maybe a thing or two kiss. About Butch for Butch.
Yeah, like, that seems good. Because like Disney princes and princesses, they kiss and that's fine. And kids get to see that. So why shouldn't you get to see us on stage kissing? And then we realized what the issue is not us kissing on stage. It's that he's told us to kiss. That is why we should not kiss.
Just like a power exchange at work there in baby's first catcall that you don't want to get.
And you don't want to reinforce it, do you? You don't want to be like, "Yes, absolutely." But yeah, it genuinely, like, he like froze. And like we were looking, like I was looking at him and he literally just had this sudden moment and his face just changed and he was like, "Why do I want to see that? What's going on there?"
So, like, honestly, normally those gigs are just so, so wholesome, but I feel like on that day, we were the sort of, like, origin of a very specific sexual preference. Like, literally, the Batman Begins of a niche search history, you know? It's I feel for it. There's this kid out there somewhere. He's like, "I want to see girls kiss, but they have to be boys, and they have to be doing sketch comedy, and they have to be chasing each other." "Why is this happening to me? I'm 8.
And then his mother came over and was like, "Come on, Timmy, let's let them get on with the comedy." Off we go. We were wondering, would you guys like to see a kid's sketch? Yeah? Yeah, I thought Quantum Leopard would be the kind of place where you guys would be like, "Yes, treat us like children." Yeah, so this is a sketch that we do for the kids, and we do it sort of after we've done like a very silly sketch, and so it's sort of like I sort of set it up as being like this is a very like sort of serious dramatic monologue, and obviously when I do it for the children, I like really ham it up, but I don't want to patronise you guys, so here we go. Here's the piece. Life is hard. I get so sad because Everywhere I go, no matter what I do, I feel so overwhelmed. Everything just gets on top of me and... Oh. No! Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
It's sort of a visual pun, this one. Yeah.
And the kids love it. They absolutely love it. They're like, wow, physical comedy. They're really excited. And then we do a really fun bit about how Ruby's like scared to get down because I'm so high up. Because obviously with children, I am pretty tall.
So yeah. Come around this. Right, I'm like, I'm still so high. They're so dumb.
Yeah, they are.
But a couple of weeks ago, this kid absolutely eviscerated Rachel after one of the gigs. She came up to us and she looks at Rachel and goes, I'm taller than you.
Which, by the way, she was not. She was not. I measured back to back. I was like, absolutely not. You are 7. You are not taller than me. How dare you?
And she maintains eye contact and goes, I will be.
Beautiful. What do we say after this bit?
We know what you're thinking.
Oh, yeah, I love this bit. Know what you guys are thinking? Yes, we have been working out. That's the only reason why we did that sketch. We don't actually do gigs for children. That's fucking ridiculous. Wouldn't degrade ourselves in that way.
Imagine if that was, it's our main source of income, actually.
No, we do. We love the children. We absolutely, that's so sweet that you believed that. we do gigs for children.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Even when they're telling us to kiss. which actually, I think from that sketch, it's like maybe there's reasons why. I don't know. Like,
straddling me and the kids like kiss and we're like, that's on you. That's on us. That was on us.
it's so funny with like that kind of gender stuff and like how it dictates like how people treat you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also comes into like gifts as well. So we're talking about this because my birthday's coming up, 6th of May. Thanks. Keep put it in the diaries. And basically, I basically have this one aunt called Aunt Helen, and she's what we like to call vibe blind. Yeah.
I love her so much. Like she's basically the kind of person who's like basically wearing like straight tinted glasses, where like she's so heterosexual that she's like everyone is. So it's like she can look at us and see two beautiful feminine gals having an off day, you know?
Yeah, and that means that the gifts Aunt Helen buys me for my birthday are interesting. Every time.
Yes, and we have written a little song about it. I think the fact that I'm going to produce this guitar from basically nowhere looks kind of...
The shadows. Woo!
So in this song, I will be singing the part of Aunt Helen.
And I will be speaking the part of me.
Wow, thank you. She's really good.
Thank you.
Here we go. Birthday time for my female niece. I can't wait to buy her treats. This year I tried really hard to get her a gift that I would love. It's a lips handbag.
Great. Wow. I mean,
pops.
It certainly pops. It certainly pops, Anna. Thank you so much. I love it.
Happy birthday to my female niece. She's a lady just like me.
Kind of.
Happy birthday to my pretty niece. Just like her aunt, she's straight. Your mother's told me that you don't date men.
Oh, fantastic, finally.
Well, I've been there and you will love again.
Not like that, Helen, not like that.
This year's gift will really help you out. You'll find Mr. Right, have no doubt.
Never chase men again. 38 dating secrets to get the guy and keep him interested. Thanks, Helen. I don't think I ever will chase men again.
Happy birthday to my female niece. She's a lady just like me. Happy birthday to my pretty niece. Just like her aunt, she's heterosexual. This year's gift is not my usual style, but I noticed that she hadn't worn her lips back in a while. I've talked to her mother, this gift's been approved, and this year I hope she really likes it too.
Oh my God, Helen! It's a t-shirt, yeah. Unisex t-shirt with a Shelf logo on it.
Helen,
that's so nice. I'm gonna put it on now.
Good, because I came and I saw your double act perform. Not this. If she comes to Edinburgh, Shelf will change the show.
This is real.
Yeah.
That is a real gift that was given to me. Most straight women wouldn't enjoy this.
Bit much, yeah. But look at you, it looks so
look
good.
Look at me
it
now,
really
Helen,
you.
Helen, I love it. Come here, let me do
it. Happy birthday to my female niece. She's a lady just like me. Happy birthday to my like her aunt, she is heterosexual. Happy birthday.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. This one obviously isn't a real gift from Aunt Helen, but I honestly, one of my proudest things is that I feel like I am queer enough to make sexy little straight girl gay. Right? Like, this feels like a gay t-shirt. I fucking love it. I'm obsessed. So Aunt Helen is a true aunt. We've changed her name. It's actually Helga. But Helga feels like a weird word. You really have to explain it.
Helga
say
feels
Aunt
fake,
Helga. But. Yeah, exactly. So it's now Helen, but don't tell Helga. And she's my aunt, and I love her. I'm getting confused. Don't worry about me. I love my aunt because she's like really interesting to me because the rest of my family is super queer. So like having like a super straight aunt is like for most people having like a gay aunt is like really exciting. Because basically both my parents are gay. My dad is a gay man and my mum is a lesbian. They were best friends throughout the 80s. And then in the early 90s, they started getting really drunk and fucking. Yep. And they did not use contraception, and they've told me this, because apparently they were role-playing and it was lesbian sex.
Yeah. Not an effective method if anyone was the power of imagination.
Not a contraceptive, no. So eventually I came along and they decided to keep me.
Spoilers, okay.
And raise me in a kind of queer utopia, which, yeah, is exactly as you guys are thinking. It is a bit like when a child is raised by wolves and it obviously gains the power of the wolf. I have that, but gay.
Meanwhile, I was raised by a beautiful straight couple, which is a little bit like when a wolf is raised by a beautiful straight couple. Until not all that long ago, like I used to present like in a very feminine way and date exclusively men.
Which is my kind of woman.
Mm. And something we've been talking about recently is like how those different experiences growing up have sort of affected the way that both of us relate to men now.
Yeah. So because I've always, because of my queer upbringing, I've always looked like this. Like literally, I do not appear to be aging. It's insane, like really, that gay power is strong. So I've always looked like this and I've always been out. And that means that I've actually never really received any kind of like catcalling or street harassment from men. I think because if you look like a teenage boy from afar, men aren't sure what to say. You don't really get, young man, smile. hey son. Show us your tits. It's not really how they do it. So I've never really experienced any of that kind of stuff.
Whereas I definitely have. I think that's probably quite a common experience, like a lot of people in the room. And I think, like, you know, when you receive that kind of stuff, I think the fact that Rachel has never experienced anything like that means that she lacks what I would call a healthy fear of men. Because I'm not saying you should be scared of all men. I'm definitely not. I just think when you grow up receiving that kind of thing, you just develop a certain radar about the men around you. And she doesn't have it. And like, we'll be out at a nightclub together. And Rachel will come over with a man with cold, empty eyes. And she'll say, "This is my new friend." Murder John. Murder John came to this nightclub alone. And he's bought us these drinks, and he'll expect nothing in return.
Seems like a great deal to me. I don't think Ruby gave Murder John a chance. No, but that's 100% true. I'm terrible for that. I have no radar for it. And I think, as I say, it's because of my queer upbringing. So I kind of was outside of that kind of like straight culture. So I didn't know about those kind of things. Like, 'cause like legitimately, like my upbringing was queer to the extent that when I was born, my parents and all of their gay friends had a massive party in which they celebrated my birth as the coming of the gay messiah. Born of lesbian and gay man, she will rise above and rule as she was meant to.
And nobody thought this would have an impact. On a child's ego, so.
But oh boy, did it! Yeah, Ruby is always shocked to find out that despite looking like this and being out the whole way through school, I was never once bullied.
Yes, I was surprised to hear that. Because we went to the same school, and like I was in the year below Rachel, and in my year, a girl with like beautiful long blonde hair wore a boy's blazer by mistake on the first day of school, and everyone called her Blazer Boy. Everywhere she went, they chanted Blazer Boy. Like, it got to the point that, you know, she dropped out. Like, that's the bar. That's the bar we were talking about our school, so just...
But I think Blazer Boy... is a sick nickname! Are you kidding? Imagine someone new starts a school and everyone's like, "Oh, who's she?" And everyone's like, "Oh, don't worry about her, that's just Blazer Boy." And then you just come sprinting past them and just like dive into a bush or something. It'd be fucking sick.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah, so that's when we realized Rachel was bullied. For years. And she just didn't notice.
Not a clue. No, that is 100% true. And again, that was like me not sort of realizing I was being bullied was because of my mum. So when I was younger and I first started at school, I like went to my mum because I was like, I went up to my mum and I was like, "Oh, mum, the kids at school keep asking whether I'm a boy or a girl, and it makes me feel weird and wrong, and I don't know what to do about it." And my mum said, "You shouldn't do anything. Don't do anything to change yourself. You're not wrong, they are. Society is wrong for suggesting that there is a binary gender and everyone has to fit in one or the other and is expected to follow along those lines without changing. That is what is wrong. You are not wrong." Think about it, Rachel, really think about it. Why on earth Why on earth does anyone ever need to know your gender? Why on earth does that matter to them? How could that possibly affect them? The only possible way it could affect them even slightly is if they fancy you and for some reason they want that to be the dictator of their sexuality. That is the only possible reason, Rachel. So don't you let anything that anyone says to you about your gender or your sexuality change who you are or the way you behave, because you're right and they're wrong. And I walked, yeah, woo indeed. Woo indeed. Go Mother Rachel. And I walked away from that. And it meant that the next time at school when someone said anything about my gender or my sexuality, I just looked at them and thought, wow, you must really fancy me. That was my whole takeaway.
The only thing
I took away from it. And like, I'm obviously a little bit more self-aware now. But back then, that was fully how I read every situation. Anytime anyone said anything about my gender or sexuality, be that a like student, a fellow student, a friend, a teacher, my full response to that was like, oh, you must fancy me, to the extent that I was talking to Ruby about the fact that I completely stopped using the girls' toilets at break and lunch at school, because every time I went in there, the girls in there would like scream and be like, it's a boy, and then chase me out. I was talking to Ruby about it, and Ruby was like,
that's bullying. That's.
Yeah,
that's...
it did make it hard to wee. But I had fully seen it at the time as like when you're in a famous boy band and you get mobbed by girls. I was very much like running out of that toilet, like, girls, please, there's enough of me to go around.
Incredible. I wish that I could sort of bag up and sell whatever. I mean, it's cocaine.
It's cocaine.
Do we have time for one last song, James? Great. Because we have written a song about Rachel and not being bullied.
Yes. It's called You Can't Bully Sexy.
/ Delusional. So,
play the song!
We, for 6 years, they chased her all the way home.
Like Justin Bieber.
She couldn't use the changing rooms, and they even stole her phone.
Easier ways to get my number?
You can't bully sexy. You can't bully a sexy fool. Oh no, you can't bully sexy. You can't bully sexy. You can't bully a sexy fool. One girl started chanting every time Rachel walked in the room.
Entrance music.
The chant went, is it a boy? Is it a boy? Is it a boy?
It's a theme tune.
It's a hate crime. She had a fascination with Rachel's presentation. But one night at a party, things started to get flirty.
Yeah, they did.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but they actually kissed. You can't bully sexy. You can't bully a sexy fool. Oh no, you can't bully sexy. You can't bully her, 'cause she doesn't know what's going on.
Thanks so much, guys!
Thanks so much, guys, Michelle!
And that was Shelf. That was an amazing set. Thank you very much, guys. That was loads of fun to watch the first time around, and loads of fun to watch as well when I was coming up with the questions, which was really, really nice. Cool. So, I mean, in terms of like the material itself, so like Rachel's kind of like misgendering in the toilets story. So it's definitely one of the sort of the kinder stories that I've heard on that sort of theme. So it feels like a lot of women stand-ups are being more open to discussing these sorts of experiences and that sort of thing. And like, so I assume that this one is kind of based on like a real experience. Like, how close is this story to the real experience of that story and those events?
It's pretty close. It was in Edinburgh, and the woman didn't like sort of like double down. It was just like her initial response was like, are you looking for your mum? And then sort of like
like definitely didn't then continue on that line once I started speaking. I was like, oh no. Like, and I obviously didn't say, yeah, I am. I was slightly more confident in my actual self. And was like, no. And like, I think I didn't at first when she asked, I didn't read it as being anything to do with her reading me as a young boy. That was a sort of like, in hindsight, I was like, oh, that's probably where that came from, because you don't generally ask a 20, you know, an adult woman if she's looking for her mum in Natalia. So it was pretty close, but the sort of embellishment, I can't remember how we did it at that gig, but I believe there was some embellishment, but it was just literally, she was like, oh, you're looking for your mum? And I was like, oh, no. And she was like, yeah. Oh. And then I just continued on my way.
Well, it's nice. I mean, like you deployed the sort of fairly standard comedic technique of then using that as a jumping off point and then kind of like exaggerating that and say, okay, well, let's do this. And instead of objecting to it and resisting it, like you would in real life, as you have just demonstrated, you did in real life. It's like, okay, well, what if I embrace that and take it too far to its illogical conclusion?
Exactly.
Cool. So, same to you, Ruby. So was your bit invented, was that invented as a topper, or was that another real life experience?
That was a completely, yeah, that was also a real life experience. I guess we have fairly similar experiences when walking into bathrooms sometimes. But yeah, that one happened at Brighton Fringe, where you wouldn't think it would. But yeah, that was in a gender neutral bathroom. That's like just completely how that happened.
Right. Okay. So, abrupt gear shift. So, with the kids show. So, at the time of recording of this, you have, I believe, quite recently won the Leicester Comedy Award for your kids show, which I saw with my 6-year-old, and it is bloody great. So, I asked him, by the way, if he had any questions for you, and he said he didn't, but he did want to say how great you were and how much he enjoyed the show, which is lovely. So, I'm like, how did you guys decide to move into kids shows? Like, I mean, children rarely attend the theatre unaccompanied. So, do you sell twice as many tickets? It's like, is it the money, or are you creatively drawn to small people?
At first we were so Isabel, who runs Comedy Club for Kids, we were like, I think it was actually Beck Hill who at first was like, oh, you guys should try kids comedy.
Yeah.
And we were like, obviously not. We're actually a very edgy, alternative, queer sketch comedy duo, and our stuff would never work for children. Don't be so ridiculous. And then we were introduced. We met Isabel, and she said the same. And we were like, well, when more than one person is suddenly saying that they think you should try kids comedy, you start to go, oh, maybe we should. And then we went and did a Comedy Club for Kids set, and we were both really nervous about it because we were sort of like, oh, what are we gonna do? And so, yeah, we tried a couple of sketches that we usually do for adults, but obviously made less, like, taken out. I mean, they didn't have any swear words in them to begin with, to be honest.
Yeah,
there was very little editing that needed to be done. But we did. So we did basically the same sketches for children. And the children loved them more than adults did. Like, they really... And it felt in a way like, and we saw other comedians performing for kids, and you kind of saw that it is such a, like, skill. Like, kids really won't give you anything, and they're often harder to keep the attention of and stuff like that. And so I think we were like, oh, this is actually like something we're good at and something that we really enjoy. And then we just kind of like, just really got into it and then kept doing it. And then last year decided, let's maybe try and do our own show. And it's just kind of growing from there, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, like, I absolutely back up what you're saying there. Like, anybody who's listening to this who has got kids of like 5 or 6 plus, Comedy Club for Kids is absolutely excellent. I've been to it a few times. It is, like, it's genuinely, it's a really nice thing to be able to share with your child. And like, live comedy has been a huge part of my life, and it's really nice to, have that experience with my son. But it's also like, and as you're saying, like, it's a real skill. Like, there's performers up there who I've seen, who I know are like vastly experienced comedians, who absolutely die on their asses because they can't crowd control a bunch of 6 to 10 year olds. And it is part of the real sort of comedian's toolkit of like, can you play this sort of crowd, right? Can you play a stag do, but you can't slap them down by making comments about their mums? Like, you have to be like really gentle and kind with it. Like, it just, it's just, it's, and like, seeing how the writing works with it as well, like a lot of the beats and the rhythms are very, very similar to like grown-up comedy, but you substitute in and out different sort of taboos and things like that and things that are punchlines. But so much of it is, I can see how it'd be a really good fit for you guys because you are very sort of movement and like outward, movement focused and outward facing in a way that I think really works with kid stuff. And that's the thing that doesn't really come across in the audio as well as it does on the video, is that you're facing outwards and like there's loads of movement and like you're doing stuff like moving each other around and things like that, which I think kids super appreciate because it's like, you know, here's movement, here's stuff going on, here's things that I can understand that aren't just a load of like niche cultural references that I don't get because I'm fucking six. So it's it works really well. I think it's a really, really strong move for you guys, and like you've come up with a really excellent show that is well worth checking out if it's in your area at the time this is going out. Yeah, it's really, 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 yeah, really good.
For sure. Yeah. And that visual stuff is so, like, it's like you say, you're kind of bringing it back to comedy basics. Like, it's kind of like a,
yeah,
like an element of slapstick, but just like visuals that are sort of universally funny. And like, it's been so great, yeah, for us because I think that's then sort of transferred a bit to our adult comedy as well. And it's allowed us to be more visual in the way that we perform things and facial expressions. And adults like find that as funny as kids do, even if they want to seem cooler or whatever. Like, yeah, something funny visually happening just does tickle you in a way that other stuff can't, I think.
Yeah, I think movement's really easy to neglect, I think, particularly if you are like a writing heavy stand-up. It's, yeah, like it's the thing that's easiest to forget to do, right? And like, you've got to do that to kind of get, like, introduce that element of depth as a performer, I think makes a huge difference to people. And yeah, in terms of like, here's a bit of variety, here are different things that are going on. I think you're absolutely right about it being sort of a back to basics approach that I think a lot of comedians could probably benefit from.
Yeah, I mean, we always want to get the parents as well as the kids. So I think, yeah, it's very useful that all of that material is kind of like fed into each other, that like, that sort of came from being for adults first, and then like we've just found all the ways to make it sillier. And yeah, and it's just really nice as well. Like, performing for them is just, I'd love to be cynical and say it is simply the money, but it's just really delightful. It's a good time.
That's lovely stuff. So do you have, like, when you're testing new material for kids, so I'm like, if you're testing new material for adults, then you go around and you do a bunch of, like, you know, second tier gigs, you try out new stuff. Like, how do you do it if you're testing kids stuff? Is there a circuit of new material nights for kids, or are you, like, breaking into schools? Like, what are you doing?
We were talking about this the other day. You just have to pretend.
Yeah, there's no, you can't, if like, so we'll do, like, a new bit, say, at Comedy Club for Kids, or we'll, like, put it in our show, yeah, trying out a new bit. And this happened at Leicester. I can't remember what it was we were doing, but we did maybe a new song or something, and the kids are just staring at us blankly, and you can't get out of it by being like, oh, that's new, it's not quite working.
Yeah.
And that doesn't then make them laugh. They just sort of regard you as if you're not doing your job well enough. It's like, like, oh no, like, so I think that is one of the trickiest things. And like, we obviously, not obviously, we could do, but we don't have access to children in the wild to practice with. So it means
you can't capture live specimens. You've got to get, exactly. Can you get like lab grown or anything like that from like narrow genetic lines?
Yeah. No. There's no way of doing, like, so my girlfriend has a 6-year-old sister who I've seen a couple of times. And with her, I was kind of like, is it wrong to test out material? See if these kids enjoy this little bit. But like, then the kind of stuff that they're into is obviously, I think, again, it's also niche. So the thing they found funniest that I did was they started calling me a bin, and they were like, you're the bin.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I don't think this is going to be replicable for like random,
you'd be surprised,
children.
I think that bit's got legs. Like, genuinely, as a parent who's constantly called upon to do new material for my child, like, I've got so much material, but absolutely none of it is appropriate for my child, because it's like either about topics that are unsuitable or it makes cultural references that he won't understand. So it's like, well, what do you do? Well, a bin's pretty universal, and it is quite funny to say that somebody is a bin. Like, yeah, there's, you know, but I don't know, maybe there'll be a jumping off point from that, right? You've got to develop that idea. But I think there's, bin legs. I think that's
yeah, potential. Maybe you're right, you know, maybe you're right. Rachel's the bin. They did love it. They started chanting it quite a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I'm already picturing me just throwing stuff for you to catch in your mouth.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad I brought this up. That is, it's a good bit.
They're gonna love it.
We're workshopping this live, right? This is, this is the process. All right.
Yeah. Oh, I'm really glad I mentioned that. I think that's great. I love catching things in my mouth as well. Exactly. And I'm so good at it. I'm like so unbelievably good at it.
A classic shelf motif is we've got a weird visual bit. It's going to be quite physical, and it involves Rachel being slightly uncomfortable in some way that is objectively quite amusing. So I think that works quite nicely.
And it is funny to call someone a bin. Like, that is a funny...
It is quite fun. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. I'm sold.
Cool. I mean, in terms of the kids show, I mean, like, from memory, there's not that much in it about like queer representation and stuff like that, except perhaps like the more sort of masculine gender presentation. I realize now that I'm talking about a show that isn't on the other half of this podcast, and that's a me problem, right? So I mean, is that something that the sort of queer representation angle that you want to incorporate more of going forward into kids shows, or is it too difficult to combine that with material that works for that age group?
Like, for me, I think one of the most important things is just that they see people who look like us having fun and making them laugh and just being there in a sort of like relaxed and kind of like aspirational kind of capacity, I guess. Because I think, like, you know, as a kid, I don't remember seeing anybody, except maybe Rachel, who like, but like in a sort of entertainment setting, or like in a setting where it was like, yeah, someone who I'm watching and being like, wow, cool, that, you know, I didn't see anyone who looked like this. And I think that's at that age, that the kind of age that the kids we're performing to are at, like, I think that kind of is the thing from my view.
I
agree. And I think that actually being too explicit about some stuff can actually make it... Like, I remember when I was a kid, whenever, like, there was, like, a breakdancing group. This is such a niche story, but I'm going to tell it anyway. A breakdancing group came to my school, and they were performing, and one of the breakdancers was a girl, but presented more, like, masculinely. And I, like, loved her. I thought she was great, so I went up to, like, get her autograph, which is what you do when you're a child. And then she went, oh, you're a tomboy like me. And I then just didn't want her autograph anymore, because she was saying that I was other and she was also other, and that's what made me uncomfortable. And I think that in the show, the kids use like a rotation of pronouns for us. They use she, they use he, they use they. And what I think is so important is we never correct them. No one ever goes, oh, that's actually like that. It's completely open space, and kids can use multiple pronouns concurrently, and they can, and they're all right. And that's really important. And I think also it's, you know, being like, you know, like being non-men, being silly and stupid on stage, like often non-male role models are the like sensible ones, or the like, it's so often it's men who get to be silly and stupid. And like, me and Ruby were like looking at like other like kids shows that are on, and some of them are absolutely fantastic, but the majority are like older men, and that's quite surprising when you think about the fact that child rearing so often has fallen to women. That like actually but the silly stupid space, the being fun, the being like boisterous and obnoxious, and the way me and Ruby like physically play, you so rarely see non-men being given that kind of space and that kind of role. And so I think doing that without commenting on it and without saying this is other, this is different, this is unique, is so much more powerful for young children than us going on stage and being like, it's okay to be gay, because I think you're, or it's okay to be a girl who looks like us, because then you're immediately saying, to my mind, you're saying it's not okay, because you're saying it's something that has to be referred to.
Has to be addressed.
And at that age, hopefully, you hope, like some of the like younger ones especially, maybe haven't even experienced stuff that makes them think that it's wrong yet. So we just get to be a part of it being a positive representation, it being fun and exciting.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, that certainly squares my own like experience of child rearing and trying to introduce my child to complicated ideas, or the idea that like some things are okay and normal and fine, and you just present them as if this is normal and fine. It doesn't really need commenting on. If there are questions, you answer the questions, but it's not like, now we're going to sit down and talk about why thing X is good and thing Y is bad and so on and so on. Do you find kids themselves like funny? Like, cause, I mean, you do really nice way. Like, one of the things I really like about the stuff that you're doing in this set about the kids stuff is that you've got, like, because of what you're doing as effectively kids entertainers, you've got a unique and fresh take on the you know, kids say the funniest thing trope. So, to you, are kids funny?
Yes,
like 100%. I think they're absolutely hilarious. Like, I mean, yeah, like. My girlfriend's sister gave us that bin thing, and we all agree that's gold. And
going
I
in.
Didn't even realize it. Like, I couldn't even see that. That's because I'm not as smart as she is. Like, that sort of the purity of the comedy and the, like, I just, yeah, and just that sort of you saying what you think first. I just think it's such a great, great way to make people laugh.
My general take on it is that, like, children aren't old enough to be socialised into lying out of politeness, so they tend to sort of just come out with the thing and, like, name the emperor. And sometimes the emperor is genuinely naked. Sometimes it's because, like, okay, the child genuinely does not understand the emperor's ensemble. But, like, a lot of the time it is that there is that, yeah, truth and purity, which I think is very interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
So I mean, how do the versions of yourselves that you play on stage, how do they differ from how you are in real life? So, like, I mean, I've spoken to you in like a rough approximation of real life, and it seems that the gap is relatively narrow. But is that the facade that you're putting up backstage? Am I unusually gullible? Like, how different are you?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, it is fairly close. It's just amplified. And, like, amplified particularly because we're on stage with each other, so we, like, play up the differences between us to a bit higher than they are in real life. But I mean,
yeah,
also, you know, we have also been hanging out for since we were 10 years old, so the dynamic is pretty heavily taken from how we just are.
So I mean, if you guys are, like, summarizing how stage Ruby and stage Rachel are in, like, a couple of adjectives, is that something you kind of, like, got in mind? Do you know which bits of yourself that you're leaning into, or is it an unconscious thing and habits that you develop through performing together?
Certainly with my character, I definitely play up being more sort of, like, reckless and loud and, like, stupid or interrupting, and definitely play down the fact that, like, I'm as anxious as Ruby about getting somewhere on time. Like, that we both arrive at a train station half an hour early just to feel like we definitely get the train on time. And, like, that's something that my character would probably, like, my character on stage would probably never say. Would probably be like, oh, Ruby's there on time and Rachel gets there a minute before the train leaves. But that actually would make me very, very upset. So that's something that we definitely, like, do we play up those the things that give our characters a very clear voice in the double act, and I think that's kind of the key thing, even if the characters are very similar to ourselves.
I can say, how about you, Ruby?
Like, I definitely play up like a slightly more, like, I guess it's interesting because I think as we've kept doing comedy, we've gotten more real, like, we've gotten closer to ourselves. Yeah. With, like, what we talk about on stage and how we talk about it. I definitely play up the more, like, deadpan aspects of how I perform because that's, like, yeah, the funniest and most extreme contrast to to, like, how Rachel, yeah, performs. Sure. But we always had a joke when, like, from when we first started where we said that, like we wanted to do weird cop instead of, like,
yeah,
so not straight man funny man, just, like, that there's always something else going on, like, you know.
I think you've done that quite nicely. I mean, like, I mean, my read on your characters is sort of like gilded idiot and deadpan mum, right? Like, that's how I'd set that contrast, right? But I mean, both of those are the weird cop, right? Like, that's you know, if you're being questioned by those two, you'd be like, maybe I've committed a crime, I'm not sure anymore. But I think you've achieved that quite nicely. I mean, is there anything else you want to say about that sort of dynamic? Is that something that you've, like, consciously worked on, or is that just kind of, like, evolved naturally?
I guess it's evolved naturally, probably at its core. I think it's definitely, and it is, as Ruby said, it is who we were as friends before we started doing comedy anyway. Like, that was, you know, when we walk into a party, those are the roles we play. So that was already there. And then I think possibly more recently, since it has been getting more personal, there's been more conversation. I think when we did sketches, there was less need to really delineate those characters in the same extent. But I think simultaneously doing more personal stuff, there's more of a question of sometimes it will be like, oh, actually, Ruby should say, even if I've written a line, it's like, oh, this actually is better in Ruby's mouth, and vice versa.
Yeah.
And certainly, again, with the kids' comedy, the difference is, again, we amplify in a slightly different way, where it's still weird cop, but you kind of have, like, and I think, again, it's something that we really like that you can represent for children is, like, you know, like different ways of being on stage and different ways of being funny and still being confident.
Yeah, yeah.
But actually being like, you know, Ruby represents something, I think, more interesting than what I'm representing, because having someone loud and obnoxious and on stage is like, yeah, that's pretty much everyone. Whereas that kind of like quiet, deadpan undercut, and certainly in the kids' show, the sort of slinky, weird kind of ways of moving is like slightly different and is often not what you see. It's playing into those dynamics.
Yeah, I think it's really nice as well, like watching this as a parent. So I end up watching a lot of kids' TV, and a lot of the, particularly sort of the kind of the big budget, or indeed extremely low budget, but big franchise stuff, often has like, okay, well, you've got an ensemble of characters, and one of them, and they've all got different personalities, and one of their personalities is girl. And that's like enormously tedious to watch as a parent. I think Ruby in particular did a really nice job of being like the Sue, if you like, in the sort of sooty and sweep and Sue kind of way. But, you know, what if Sue, but she was like more tolerable, more fun, and had good lines, right? So you're kind of there within the context of the kids show, like the more mature one to Rachel, who's both sooty and sweep at the same time, right? Like that was kind of my reading of it, but I know maybe I just watched it in the city as a child.
I actually haven't seen it, but yeah, no, I find the kids' stuff a really fun opportunity to like, to be very sort of like physically silly, because in the kids' show, like I'm constantly doing like characters or voices or like, as Rachel said, sort of surprisingly slinky movement.
Yeah.
It's both alarming and hilarious.
I mean, in the kids show, you do, there's a really good bit where you just do a look to the audience, and a whole audience full of children know exactly what you were doing. And that was like, was one of my favourite bits of the show. It was one of my son's favourite bits of the show, the way you just kept doing that. And your callback to an audience full of children who are like hyped up on sugar and leaving the house and all of this sort of stuff is like, and they get it. They get that callback. And it's a very simple, just look into the audience with a particular expression on your face. And that expression is a very subtle expression. And that's a very subtle expression for A, comedy, and B, definitely kids' comedy, which I think is enormously impressive and really, really excellent. Oh, I'd like to talk about the Dangerous Mendar bit when we talk about the contrast between you guys. So, right, so this is absolutely a phenomenon that I recognise, a bit from having it myself, being a man, to a less extent, being, like, judged by women and anyone socialised as female through that lens, right? So I suppose this is, I think, more of a question for Rachel. So, like, how are you alive?
Yep, and that bit is like, that's like 100% true. Like, there is no embellishment in that bit. That is just like, no, I'm shocked I'm alive. And like, it's how I was as a teenager as well, which I find, as I get older, I'm learning, but B, it's safer and safer. But as a teenager, like, I think it's, and it's such an interesting one, because I think I did, you know, I presented masculinely, I was socialized with boys, so I very much like saw myself and in like interacted with guys out and about as if they knew me the way my male friends knew me, or like they were seeing me as the same. And like the reality is you know, a lot of them probably were, but some of them definitely weren't. And so that sort of combination of like me being like, ah, oh, a friend, like, yeah, mate, blah, blah, blah. And then actually, you know, there being a tinge of like them being like, oh, well, actually, this is a woman. Like, you know, and you get to a certain level of drunk and they're suddenly like, and I've seen the switch with some guys as well, like not often, but like occasionally where like I've seen it as we're a couple of blokes hanging out, a couple of men, and then they reach a certain level of drunk where, I don't know, this becomes sexy. I don't know what it is, but they reach a certain level of drunk and suddenly I'm female, or they're reading me. And then again, that's a horrible, and that's the type of, that's the reason why I shouldn't be interacting with these men in the first place, because the kind of men who, the minute they then see you as female, are going to treat you differently that's a real problem. That's a huge problem. But I think it was so, what's the word? It was so, what's that word? Like, validating of my masculinity that men would engage with me like that, that I was like, oh, this is great. Like, I'm one of the boys. And then actually, as I've gotten older, I'm like, no, the boys are bad.
I mean, is that a sort of trajectory that you followed as well, Ruby, or is that not an experience you recognise? Because I mean, like, I mean, I've seen you guys for a number of years, and when I first encountered Shelf, I think it would be fair to say that you were a lot more kind of femme presenting, and now rather less so. I mean, is that something that you have found validating? Do you get on with the lads? Do you want to get on with the lads?
I mean, I hate to say it, but I do think that I kind of physically can't relate to them like that, because, you know, because like I just, that's what it was like when I was a teenager, and when I was younger than a teenager, you know, I was like the guys, like I got the, like Rachel was saying about seeing the switch. It was like, I had the bit after the switch just all the time. And so even now, like I do feel a bit bad about it, because, you know, that distrust, it does get in there, but it does mean that, like, these days a guy will come up and be like, oh, nice shirt, bro. And I'll be like, what do you want? What? Like, because I'm, like, still, you know, haven't fully, like, shaken that, and, like, and, yeah, no, it's interesting, but it does, like, you do start to, I have noticed the nuance more and like how some guys relate to me. And I do find it in some ways validating when guys sort of see me more like them. But yes, I do have a deep distrust.
I also think Ruby just has higher standards than me. to say from an outside perspective, like, and then also just guess the sort of, like, more of an awareness of what's going on around them. Like, I think so much of my going along with certain male behaviors, or like men in certain scenarios, is that they'll be like, to me, being like, yeah, let's do this, yeah, you're sick, let's go, and then like at this simultaneously being very like making like femme presenting people in the group feel very, very uncomfortable. And the reality is when that's happening, Ruby notices. I am learning to now, but like certainly when I was younger, and Ruby can attest to this, I'd just be there like, no, but we're having a great time. What on earth are you talking about?
It was literally Murder John. It was literally Rachel being there like, what could possibly be wrong with Murder John?
Yeah, I've definitely noticed that within like social settings myself, and like some of the factors have been different, the pieces have been in different places on the board, but yeah, for sure. Okay, I want to talk about Can't Bully Sexy, because this is an absolute stone cold banger, right? So it's a bloody great song, right? So with the songs, you've very much got the dynamic of Ruby's doing the music, a lot of the singing, and Rachel has like a manic sort of dancing Bez like energy, which I personally very much enjoy. When I first saw you years ago, you were a sort of fairly formally traditional sketch act, but you've kind of branched out in lots of different ways since, with the kids show, the musical comedy, and you know, what I choose to describe as the late Shelf style of it, being like sort of, it's less sketch and more of a sort of stand-up double act. Like, I mean, what's kind of been the driving force behind those sorts of changes?
So I mean, with the change towards the sort of late Shelf, as you call it, which I love, is it's basically just like gigs. Like the alternative comedy scene when we started, you could gig fairly regularly in a week with sketches, doing sketch comedy, and particularly post-pandemic, those were the first to go, and I think they are slowly coming back. I think they are, but I think for us it was like, we need to get back on stage, and you know, with social distancing and stuff like that, it became like, you need to use microphones because we're performing in slightly bigger spaces and people spread out, or like outdoors or something like that, and you just can't do a sketch holding a microphone. Like, it is very difficult to do, and headsets are a nightmare. And there were just so many reasons why it was like, this doesn't really make sense. So then we were like, well, let's try and turn some of our sketches into songs. I've always wanted to do musical comedy. Ruby has been stopping us for a very long time. But yeah, and then once we started doing the musical comedy, you start being more like a band, and then we started chatting more between the songs, and so then the talking started to increase, and then we were finding we were getting such big laughs from the chat to the audience, and like talking about ourselves and our experiences, that we were like, oh, actually, like, you know, we're in a position where like the songs are good and the songs are getting are hitting, but like actually it's the us talking about our personal lives and us interacting with each other that's really making audiences laugh. So it started from a very sort of logistical place, and then I think incredibly quickly we were like, oh no, this actually works much better for us.
Yeah, completely. And I guess it is like, it is closer to what's funny about us as a pair of friends. Like, you know, that's, it's getting closer and closer to just putting that on stage and like recreating that vibe for audiences. And yeah, using microphones did open up a whole new world of gigs for us, which was financially really nice.
Lovely. Yeah, I mean, I love this. My inner Marxist is very much loving this sort of materialist explanation driven by exogenous economic factors. Yeah, this is what happens. Like, the superstructure is entirely dependent on the substructure. Okay, yeah. Great. Good. Right. Okay. Socialism is the superior system. All right, okay, good. That's the one message of this podcast. Lovely. So I've got some questions from the Quantum Leopard Militia. So Dave from the Quantum Leopard Militia group says, some successful musical comedy acts drift away from doing musical material as their popularity grows. So where are you at now in terms of musical comedy, and do you think that's going to change in any particular direction in the future?
I mean, the new show that we're working on right now, I mean, it has less songs in it than our last show did. And I guess sort of more talking, more sort of stand-up style stuff. But I mean, the songs are just, they're a really fun thing to do together, a very fun way to be on stage together. And, but I mean, who knows, you know, once upon a time we might have said that we would never stop doing sketches for adults. And look at us now.
And Ruby did indeed say that they would never do musical comedy, so
oh, don't tell Dave that, he'll be mad. I was very resistant.
Yeah, and there is a degree, and it's entirely me, obviously, that there's a limitation to us with the music where it's like we've had it before, like there's this song Mysterious Boy, which is about Ruby being mysterious, and if I could sing it, I think it would be brilliant, because it's obviously a lot of the routine of our songs is Ruby's playing, singing as a character that is, or it's singing about something that's what is Rachel like, or what's Rachel interacted with, or whatever. And the reality is because I'm tone deaf, I can't do the same back. And I think that does limit to a degree the musical comedy. But I think, as Ruby said, I think the way that we do songs, and the way that songs offer us a chance to explore, oftentimes like very like tricky to otherwise explore gender stuff, or like voicing the opinion of straight people, like it gives us a third voice, which I hope we'll never lose, but I don't think we will. I think it's unlikely we're going to get more songs or more musical than we were in the Hair show, just because Hair was, we were transferring a lot of stuff that had been sketches, we've been turning them into songs because we already had a show that was sketch comedy and we were no longer doing sketch comedy, whereas I think now as we write more new material and we're doing more stuff and we're largely gigging with stand-ups, it is that chat that's just getting the best, that gets like, it is the easiest to do in multiple locations and what have you. Although said, like, there's plenty of places where we're like, this place needs a song. They're going to want a song.
Exactly. As Rachel says, like, it does give us a third voice, like, you know, whereas some audiences, particularly in like, you know, smaller towns, more regional areas, might see us as quite a niche thing. Like we can play a song that we couldn't say as stand-up, and then that can give us a sort of relatability in those contexts as well.
As somebody who can never do musical comedy as a result of his inherent limitations as a performer and a person, I've always kind of like had this sort of pet theory that musical comedy is sort of cheating, because you automatically get an applause break after it, right? Unless your audience were like raised in a fucking barn. It's like, yeah, there's going to be a clap after this. I played you a song, clap, right? So I suppose you've got that inbuilt thing. If you've got a particularly tricky audience in a village hall in the arse end of nowhere, you have got that trick up your sleeve, which I think is really a handy thing to have in the toolkit.
And if you're outside or doing a gig that's not in like a space where it's easy to be heard, Like, you can do, the minute Ruby's on a guitar, no one needs to know I'm not singing. Like, it just looks like we're doing a thing and that's accepted and it doesn't matter whether people are listening or looking anymore. Like, it just is.
Yeah.
I don't think we would ever stop doing them full stop, but yeah.
Yeah.
Just because it's such a useful... Ruby's very musically talented. Why waste that?
Oh, that's lovely. Okay, on the subject of lovely, so we also had Karen and Simon of the group both said independently that they took potential partners to see you, and the fact that the potential partners liked you guys was taken as a sign of good taste, which I think you can take that as read that it means that liking Shelf makes you more fuckable.
True.
those are both more comments rather than questions. Alison, as our last question, Alison would like to know if you will be her friend.
Yes.
Yes, okay, cool, that's fine, great. There we are.
The last question I'd like to ask you guys is if there's one thing that you could say to yourself at 18, what would it be?
I mean, I guess mine, yeah, would probably just be like, stop forcing yourself to wear skirts and maybe start dating girls. You're going to save a lot of time.
I'll admit this question does hit a lot differently for queer acts than straight acts.
Yeah.
It is...
Or a straight act, just like invest in Bitcoin.
But... Yeah, pretty much.
Like, nobody's taken an opportunity to warn anybody about 9/11, which I think says a lot about the comedy community. But, you know, what are you going to do? Rachel?
I don't know what I'd say to 18. Me at 18 was like peak arrogance. Like, I truly thought I was God's gift to everything, but especially women. And I don't know. I think, like, I'd just tell me to keep on doing. I don't know. That's probably quite arrogant of me now, isn't it? Like,
couldn't tell me nothing. 18. I was perfect, and I wouldn't have listened anyway. Think,
Well, but there was. I had blinkers up, like, for sure. I was short sighted. I was literally short sighted, but I was, like, also emotionally short sighted. I had blinkers up. I was very, like, I saw the world in a very, like, rose tinted way. I thought. Feminism, we didn't need feminism, there was no such thing as homophobia, like which is real bad looking back, but the way I lived in that ignorance, like, I'll never feel that good ever again.
Like, it's this white, like, straight man experience for a little sweet window.
Yeah, literally. And like, but like, I guess straight man experience in a way where I'd fought for it because I hadn't felt like that when I was younger. And then I'd taken a risk in terms of cutting my, like, in terms of just, like, really being myself. And it really paid off. And, yeah, just, I was just, like, fucking, I was up here. And then it all came, but I think at 18, it was just the peak of just, I would say that I'd say to my 18-year-old self, like, recognize what you've got. But she fucking knew. I knew what I had. I knew it. I was just.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That is a very compelling but also terrifying answer, Rachel.
Thank you very much for that. That's wonderful.
Okay, lovely. Thank you so much for talking to me today, guys. So if people want to catch up with your stuff, where can they track you down? What have you got to plug?
We're at Shelf Comedy on all social media. You know, come join the gang.
Yeah. If you've got children, come see the kids show. If you've got adults, come see the adult show.
Okay, that sounds great. So definitely go and check them out. They're both wonderful shows, appropriate. I'm not going to say for all ages, but the shows that are appropriate for the ages they're appropriate for are appropriate for those ages, and they're very good. So you should go and see them. Okay, thanks so much, guys. That was super, super lovely, and I will see you soon. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
That was the Quantum Leopard podcast. If you want to catch a live show in London, look us up at linktree.com/QuantumLeopard to sign up to the mailing list. We will never take advertising because advertising is cultural poison, but from each according to their ability to each according to their need. So if you enjoyed our guests in your ears, but would like them in your eyes as well, we have videos of whole shows up on patreon.com/QuantumLeopard. We only charge when a new live show video comes out. If you enjoyed the show, why not give us a 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice and or share this episode on the socials. Editing was by Rhys Lawton, who is conventionally attractive and fun at parties. Music was composed and produced by Rooks Production Services at I Am Rooks on the socials. That's Rooks with an E. The Quantum Leopard podcast is distributed and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 international license, which means you can share it as much as you like, but don't change it or sell it in any way, because I will find out where you live. Kind love and see you soon. Bye.
Like, in London, I'm considered small. I think in Scotland, I'm, like, tiny. So...